nothing.
Well, I'm sorry, fans. You stumped the panel. I'm actually a flutist in an air band. Special thanks to Arlene Francis, Soupy Sales. Remember to buy Geritol. Good night, everyone.
What?
Bye.
Oh, see you later.
Bye. Hey, take it easy.
Hey, take care. Hey, we try, we try. Thank you for your donations, but it wasn't enough. Speaking of smelling like roses, let's open the line for Dave Grossman. San Rafael, go! Dave Grossman, welcome to We Talk Games.
Hey, thanks. Nice to be here.
Right on, man. Now, earlier in the show, we had Noah on. I know that you worked with Noah in the past.
Oh, yes, quite a few times, yes.
Right on, right on.
Fine, gentlemen.
He is. It was my favorite interview so far, I think. I have no idea why, but for some reason, that's how it rang through to me.
I believe, actually, that Noah was the first person to look over my shoulder while I was working and laugh at what I was doing.
Well, that's a good thing, I guess, considering what your product is. Unless you were working on something serious, then that would be kind of, I guess, not as
I was,
good.
But I switched to comedy immediately because of that.
Yeah. I see.
No, I was actually writing some dialogue for some guys in a circus tent on the Secret of Monkey Island back about 20 years ago.
Speaking of that, and how did you get your start?
More or less completely by accident. I was a computer science geek type kid.
Okay.
And I had been to college, and I'd even been to graduate school for a little while studying artificial intelligence. And decided that I didn't actually want to stay in academia forever, so I was just kind of looking for work, doing something that wasn't going to be sort of designing missile guidance systems or anything reprehensible like that.
Mm.
And I answered an ad at Lucasfilm. They were looking for people to help them design and implement their games. And I thought, oh, that sounds harmless enough.
Wow, wow. So you started right off right there.
I did start right off right there, yeah. I gathered that what drew the attention to my resume was the fact that I had listed apple juice as an interest, and somebody thought that that was funny. So that got me the interview, and I'm still not sure why they hired me, but they did.
That reminds me of some of the jobs I got in IT, where most companies, when they try to hire someone for IT, especially be like an administrator, they look for things such unneeded requirements such as computer sciences or things that you went to school for, but they would ask this of people that just needed to, you know, Nortel and things that aren't really computer science related. But the most impressive thing to them on my resume was that I had a website early 90s, and that has nothing to do with administrating infrastructure of some big corporation, but yet that was impressive to them. So who knows
in
what
the early 90s, I suppose it did actually require a little bit of technical know-how. It doesn't really now, but at the time.
Yeah, well, it still was just a markup language, nothing deeper than that. But
I was amazed at the time, though, people were offering me money, large sums of money, actually, to come and build websites for them, which didn't seem very very interesting to me. This was during the freelance part of my career.
I see.
And there just was a sort of a general lack of knowledge about exactly how easy it all was.
That I guess that's why it was impressive to some people. But apple juice, that is in a whole class by itself, and I don't know why I soiled that wonderful, delightful story with my mundane bit of interjection there. Now, you started right out in Lucasfilm, and you started right out with graphic-based adventures or text-based adventures or that type of genre?
Yeah, yeah. Graphic adventures was what they had specifically hired us to do. They were going to kind of up the ante a little bit there and try and make more of those, and they basically decided that they were going to need people to implement them and kind of grow into lead designers, and they were building their stable, I guess.
I see, I see. And as far as the programmers that we've had on the show, I think you're fairly unique in that you've really stuck to your genre.
Pretty much, yeah. I've strayed a little bit. I did a little writing for things like Total Annihilation for Cave Dog.
Okay.
That was just kind of the Ron Gilbert connection there. But by and large, yeah, I have stuck pretty closely to adventure games, story games, things of that nature, interactive story books even.
And what
I like them. I think they're interesting. There's a whole sort of unique narrative form going on there that is still kind of in its infancy in terms of what people have explored about it.
true, and I am a big fan of Japanese gaming, and of course anything that comes out of studios in Japan is seriously lacking in that story element, especially after it gets translated. But even before translation,
that can always be a problem. Yeah.
But even before translation, it can be a little. Now, if they just made all the translations like early Speed Racer, those Translux gimmicks, that would be fantastic. Then it would be a whole different story. Who cares if the story's bad if everyone talks in a real weird canter?
I gather sometimes they'll do the translations twice and it works out better. They'll do one translation for language, and then they'll translate the English language story into English again and make it good.
I see. Speaking of making things good, what was the best thing that you can remember about working at Skywalker Ranch, and also the worst thing?
The best thing was probably lunch, actually. They had a 4-star restaurant chef. Being there for us, extremely subsidized, so that I could go into this swanky room that was basically like a nice restaurant, get some really great food, take half of it back to my office, and save it for dinner. I think they were kind of trying to set up an environment that would encourage us never to actually leave the ranch.
Gotcha.
Which is sort of it's a half hour from anywhere, so that was actually a good thing that we didn't have to go out to get lunch or anything.
I know that you enjoy a little poetry. Here's one right off the cuff, which I stole from my youth. Lunch. It's actually pretty good.
Awesome poem.
Thank you. Now, I did steal that from my lead guitar, so. He doesn't listen to his show, so it's mine for all intents and purposes. What do you think was the worst thing about working at the Skywalker Ranch? Or was there any downside?
Not about the ranch itself. Well, the commute was actually a little bit ugly. Mm. It took an hour from my house and an hour back. And there was a little bit of a kind of a reality disconnect, because the place was so nice to be at. Then when I got home at night, it was kind of like, oh, gee, this is what real life is like. You know, sort of paint peeling off the walls and people yelling outside and sort of ugliness. I suppose it's true that the hours were kind of long and the pay wasn't very good, but the hours were long because I was really excited about what I was doing and didn't really want to go home. I kind of wanted to stick around and play with the game some more and write some more stuff. And, the pay was bad because I was just starting out.
I see.
Can't really argue with that.
What type of equipment were you programming on back then?
Wow, we were using PCs. They were I probably had a 486 on my desk. The target machines for the games were 286s, because that was what most people had at the time, which is why all those games are, 320 by 200, run real slow, the animations are all real tiny. Hmm. But that was kind of, it was an interesting box to be playing around in, because it made the games be kind of like little puppet theater things.
Sure.
And because you sort of had to accomplish everything with just a few little gestures with the character, you could sort of reach up high in the air or reach out straight, then you had to use that for everything. They're going to shake hands. It was the same as picking up something from the table. So because you didn't have to sort of animate everything specially, and you didn't have to lip sync anything, you didn't have to record any dialogue, you could just keep putting content into the game right up until the last second, and that was really a pretty cool thing to be able to do.
Right. Now, Full Throttle, that was at a later time. That was a big jump in production value. You had Silicon Graphic workstations, I'm sure, doing some of the, I don't know if the art got rotoscoped on top of that or how that all worked. I know Peter Chan was a phenomenal artist of that. That was one of my favorite series, especially for the Mac.
Pete Chan was a tremendous artist and really, really fast. I worked with him on Day of the Tentacle, and he did all the backgrounds to the entire game himself, and he would paint them first on paper and then scan them and kind of clean them up. And they would take him about 2 days apiece.
Wow.
So he would, come in early every day, and he would leave at 4:30 and go home to his family. And the rest of us who were sort of staying till 2 a.m. But what could we do? He got his work done.
He's responsible for that soda machine and the clock.
Yeah.
Trying to think of all the other neat backgrounds from that series. Speaking of that series, the game mechanics were similar to Clock Tower on the original Maniac Mansion. But then Day of the Tentacle, you abandoned the cat and mouse element. Why the change between the original Maniac Mansion and Day of the Tentacle?
Well, that was mostly about time. 5 years had gone by since the original Maniac had been released. And we all kind of felt like, okay, well, if we tried to sort of make a direct sequel to this, something that felt the same, then it would just automatically feel dated. So that was kind of a unique opportunity to do a sequel without really doing a sequel. So we got all the benefits of having some characters that were designed and funny already, but we didn't have to worry about kind of slavishly aping a style or anything, and we could just sort of go on and do our own thing and make it the best and coolest thing we could think of.
Now you're at Telltale Games.
I am, and right as we speak.
And that was started by a lot of the people that used to work in Lucasfilms as well?
Yeah, quite a few of the members of the last and greatest Sam and Max team at LucasArts sort of cut and ran and started this company in 2004.
When you worked at LucasArts, did George ever share with you his master plan to destroy pinball?
I do remember going actually up to the main house and checking out a pinball game. I think it was an Indiana Jones one, and they had like a prototype model, and they just wanted to have people who actually enjoyed pinball play it and tell them whether it was any good.
Uh-huh.
So
uh-huh.
I think there was actually some support of pinball going on.
But
there,
it sounds like a bit of animosity.
Perhaps I just didn't realize that there was a secret underlying plan going on at the time. I was duped. It's not my fault, I swear.
No, I'll get to the bottom of this one day, believe me. Telltale Games, did they start their console comeback on the Wii, the WiiWare, with the Strong Bad episodic?
Yeah, that was our first console title, actually, was Strong Bad's Cool Game for Attractive People on WiiWare.
Got my money.
And we're gradually trying to kind of get ourselves onto every downloadable channel possible.
Oh, very
but,
good.
WiiWare seemed like kind of a good entry point for us because we sort of feel like the just the Nintendo audience in general is probably in tune to the kind of semi-casual, semi-mainstream experience that our games are meant to provide. They exist kind of somewhere between hardcore and casual space.
Right, right. And now I know Sam & Max is available at the Xbox Live Arcade as well.
And PS3. Wallace & Gromit, too.
Oh, right, right, Wallace & Gromit. Very good. But no love for the PS3 yet. Is that in the works, or what stopped that from happening?
That's all business deals and what opportunities present themselves first.
I see.
We had some good opportunities to get onto the Wii and the Xbox that came partly out of actually our CSI series, allowed us to kind of get pieces of the engine working on those platforms.
Oh, gotcha.
So that was just opportunity, really.
Oh, look who came. They're back. Stinky, sorry. Other things going on around here in the background. What systems do you currently own?
Me, currently, I've got a Wii in my living room. I still have a PlayStation 2. I was probably the last guy in the world to get one of those. I've got a DS, and I've got a PC. Because I've still got my Super Nintendo, you know, working in there, and my Sega Genesis.
Very good.
Hey, Dave!
Hey, how's it going?
Hey! Hey, do you like those things?
Which things?
You know, those computers.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, I like those. They do what you tell them.
Right,
that's
yeah.
That's what I like them.
Yeah, I used to own an ENIAC.
An ENIAC? Ooh, that's old school.
Stinky, I bet that you probably owned a difference engine. Get out of here.
All right,
that jerk. How long have you been at Telltale Games?
Oh, I signed up in the middle of 2005, so I guess that's been around 4.5 years going on. That's a long time. It was right at the end of the first Bone game was kind of getting ready to come out the door. And then the next thing we did was The Great Cow Race. I was the lead on that, and then we sort of launched into Sam & Max afterwards.
Any plans on Full Throttle? I have a great name for it if you do a follow-up. Fuller Throttle. That's my...
Fuller Throttle? Okay,
yeah.
Writing that down.
That will never happen.
Never mind. Fuller Throttle... How many T's in Throttle?
I use 3.
4. Yeah. I think we'll give this one 4, though, just for extra oomph.
I think that would be over with the kids.
Throttle. Or maybe just put the extra one at the beginning.
I like
maybe
it.
Maybe we'll go with 5 T's. You know what? You just can't have too many T's. 5 T's with Fuller Throttle.
Why not?
Tim will be proud. One of the T's will be for him.
Ah! Hey, that's an Easter egg. built-in Easter egg. Now, I notice that you have something I'm also very, very interested in. You've taken your ideas, your concept, your persona, and you've put it online, I'm assuming, in Phrenopolis.
Yeah, Phrenopolis is kind of meant to be an imagined, you know, kind of a semi-imaginary, semi-real thing that's the, kind of the space between my brain and the internet and the garage of my house, which is where I keep the books that I sell through that website. But it's also got, you know, pictures of my tiki collection and my annual jack-o'-lantern carving, the Pumpkin House of Horrors. That's pretty fun, actually. That gets more hits than anything else on the site.
A girlfriend of mine, she's a very good... I don't know. Unfortunately, she would be labeled as like a gothic type of artist, although that has nothing to do with it. But it's very Edgar Allan Poe-ish in painting form. And every year she has a porch full of vomiting pumpkins.
Awesome.
Yeah, man.
That sounds like my house.
And it fit right in. I was enjoying the pumpkins. I was enjoying the hilarious poems. I could almost hear Vincent Price reading it on the hilarious House of Frightenstein. It's a type of... Mm-hmm. Of tempo it instilled into me. That didn't make sense. I like the ode to the stuff in a sink. That's your book, I guess.
That is my book. It came out of my my Poem of the Week project, which started actually in 1994 and is still going, surprisingly enough. And I just started doing that because, you know, I thought making funny poems was kind of fun. And I gave it to myself as kind of just a writing project, because they say if you're going to write, you should just write all the time. And
sure.
if you have a weekly deadline, then you'll keep writing all the time. You're kind of forced to. And I started sending them to people online to keep myself honest, so that there would be somebody out there who was like actually expecting to have a new poem. And so far, that's worked. Actually, I'm almost up to 700 of them in 14 years.
Wow! Well,
and it provided a good groundwork, actually, of experience for doing games episodically. It's kind of the same thing. You have to sort of focus in on what's important and make the game, and sort of move on to the next one as fast as you can.
Sure, sure.
And then I had enough of them that a theme started to suggest itself for a book, which was. Sort of poems about being a single guy, you know, kind of bachelorhood and putting your feet on the table and the existential angst of shaving, you know, that kind of thing. And I was involved at that point and thinking about getting married, so I knew that I had to get the book done before I did that, or I wasn't going to have any more juice for that.
May I suggest a hilarious limerick section for maybe an offshoot at some point in the future?
An offshoot, just do limericks?
I would love it. The weekly limerick.
The weekly limerick. You should listen to Wait, Don't Tell Me on the radio. They do limericks.
And of course, you have a great political section there as well. Your hate on the daylight saving time, which I love.
You love daylight savings time, or you love my hate of daylight savings time?
I love your opposition to it.
Yes. I've always thought it was just silly and caused a lot of problems, you know? They started and everybody's late for work, and my great aunt missed her own sister's funeral because it was right after daylight savings time.
Yeesh. No lie. Wow. Well, then I understand. And you'd like to punch Ben Franklin right in his face.
Ben Franklin, the inventor of daylight savings time? Wow. I respect the guy for a lot of things, but not that.
Especially for his fashion.
His fashion. Well, yes, his fashion. He was always quite popular with the ladies, I gather.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's enough material for your next gimmick, I'm sure. Now, speaking of which, you have anything in the works that you could let us in on, or it's all hush-hush and you can't break the...
Well, not entirely hush-hush. I mean, I've been spending a lot of time with the Sam Max team lately because we're designing a new season there. The illustrious Chuck Jordan is sort of taking the reins of that and doing some interesting things that I think people are going to like.
Fantastic. Dave, thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule. I know that it was an effort, so I truly, truly appreciate it. Thanks for letting us know that, yes, indeed, there definitely was some type of plot there to destroy Pinball in the Lucas camp.
Fight the power. Fight the power.
Right on, man. Hey, join us again in the future to help. We'll push at least 5 or 6 games, I promise. See you now.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Wow, I feel like I just got off the line with Sam and or Max. I felt like I was part of the game instead of doing an interview trying to find out about, except for that one incredibly geeky question about games. I didn't really ask any questions about games. I'm much more interested in playing a game. I feel like Hank Rogers when he said, oh, I...